Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We have five citations left for the Virginia ratification debates. And as I mentioned in our previous episode, even I am chomping at the bit to kind of cover some of these things that are, you know, just popping up in the news and so forth. And so we will be getting to that, but we do need to cover the final parts of the Virginia ratification debates. The reason I do this is so that you can actually earmark those episodes where we actually go through the facts. So that way, if you want to listen again, because even as I listen to an audiobook, I 9 times out of 10 have to go back to reread. It's just like rereading a part of a book that you just, what was that? And because something jumps out at you and then you want to go back and listen to it. And so that's why you want to earmark these days. And so what I'll probably do is I'll probably make those notations, because I really don't want to spend a lot of time on all the different things that we've touched and covered regarding the podcast. But I will probably provide you with the beginning of the ratification debates to the end of the ratification debates, because I think we only took one break in there. So with that, what we want to do is, you know, kind of finish up today with hopefully the Virginia ratification citations. We will get in our next episode to New York. Who knows? It may take a whole episode. It may take more. I have to wait till I get it up and actually look at the different citations and go, because for the most part, like I said, there's similar stuff. The thing you need to take away from the ratification debates is there is zero, and I just want to emphasize, this is all caps, zero evidence that our Constitution is, one, a living document, or two, that there is this concept that the federal government has redefined these clauses, such as the exclusive legislative powers of the district, or redefined the four mystical clauses of the Necessary and Proper Clause, the General Defense and Welfare Clause, the Commerce Clause, as well as the Supremacy Clause. These have been so well defined in our founding documents that why would anybody even start believing these lies, other than the fact that back then, when they had supposedly the champions of the Constitution, like John Marshall, who later became a person that was deliberately undermining, creating unconstitutional footings, here he was selling the Constitution and laying out a confirmation that this is a limited and defined government, their jurisdiction is limited to the enumerated powers and so forth, to where when he became a Chief Justice and under the tutelage of Alexander Hamilton, he actually started self-aggrandizing and actually lying or directly contradicting himself in what he said during the ratification debates. So the question is, what is legally binding? As this guy in a government position starts self-aggrandizing and or contradicting what he said, or were his comments during the ratification debates, you know, the legally binding comments? And of course, it is the ratification debates are the legally binding definitions, legally binding clarifications, elucidations, terms of the contract. So if you had a contract dispute with somebody and you told them that you were going to give them a chicken every day, and then you meant, oh, well, a chicken every day of, you know, of the first day of the week, where you there was this little, you know, pretense, or I should say parentheses around, well, it's only going to be one day a week for, you know, for this person paying you so much money. And there is actually written evidence that says and proves that you actually said every day, not only, you know, every day and the first day of the week, or one day out of the week, or how you have tried to, you know, weasel out of how you have defined the term of a chicken every day. Because bottom line, in a legal contractual dispute, what you said in selling that contract is legally binding. And that's the beauty of the ratification debates. I know that a lot of people, oh, well, you can't really go. Absolutely, you can. Because the states, the delegates that were representatives of the people at the time, bought into how you sold that contract. Now, these were representatives of a perpetual entity, not representatives of just a person, but a formed government called the state of Virginia, the state of Maryland, the state of Pennsylvania, the state of Massachusetts, so on and so forth. And so that's how important the ratification debates are, because are those states still alive? And has the union actually grown? Of course it has. And every state that has come into this union has entered in this union on the same terms and definitions that were created in the creation of this union. This is why this is so important, because there's nowhere in these debates that says that they could start making changes to how they interpret the Constitution, such as states entering the union. Why is it that states entered into the union on different footing? There was nothing in there. And as a matter of fact, they even set the precedents when they made a minor change to the choosing of the president in the Electoral College. As I go over this all the time, they made a minute change. And if you look at that change in comparison to how states joined the union, that would have required, no, capital R required, an amendment to the Constitution. And so, you know, they're making it up as they go along, and they've been doing everything they can to aggrandize their control, to improve their position, and to make them the master of the masters, because the states are the masters in this relationship. And so when people say, oh, well, you know what, you can't prove that in a court of law. And what I like to tell people, and I love to tell you, is that it doesn't matter what a judge, even what a constitutional professor believes and can prove that they think they can prove, because they can't prove. But even regardless of what, you know, all the contradictory terms of what I am saying, people that are trying to contradict me, it doesn't matter, because the only thing that matters is when the states pull together what they believe these ratification debates mean, because they are the ultimate, I'll just call this, they're the ultimate court. They're the ultimate assembly of a jury over their constitution. And whenever I say this, whenever I put this out, usually all of a sudden mum's the word. Nobody says anything at that point, because they know I'm right. They know I'm 100% right, that once the states collectively join to enforce their constitution, how they dictate those ratification debates to mean based on those words that they say. If they say those words are legally binding, guess what, folks? The argument is over. It is moot. And so with that, I feel compelled to remind you that this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, as well as RepublicReview.org, and you are listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence and the academic evidence-based solutions necessary if we're going to save our liberty. When we get into the marketing, I kind of want to get into some of the different things that I've kind of been exposed to through different parts of the country and so forth, as people have been reaching out and either have asked me to come speak or what have you. And I want to thank you. I don't do this enough, and so I want to make sure I take the time right now. I want to thank those of you who have been listening, and I definitely want to thank those of you who have actually been taking time to getting people to listen. As a matter of fact, the one way you can really If you are a common listener, you're listening on a daily basis. And you know what? I make mistakes. You know, I'm a human being, and sometimes I will, you know, either the connections in the mind or what have you, sometimes I'll say something that might offend somebody, or I might say something that is not in the proper context or what have you. So I do make mistakes. We're all human. But the point is that if you're talking to people and you're getting them to listen, and you're getting them, supposedly, they say, yeah, I'll check it out. What you've got to do is you got to follow up. And you just, you know, if you're listening on a regular basis, then you say, well, when did you listen? What was he talking about? And by doing that, they go, oh boy, there's quizzes to this as well. Because what ends up happening is over time, as you start creating a dialogue on the things that we cover, because some of the things we're going to cover coming up are some awesome interviews with Keith Broders, as well as some very interesting interviews with John Durash and so forth. What we want to do is expose you to some of these different concepts, and we're actually going to have Brent Winters on as well. I'm just going to need to schedule the time so we can get that into the can. We're going to get into other founding documents. You probably know what they are. We're going to cover Madison's property. We're going to cover the vetoes of the bonus bill, the vetoing of Congress's three attempts of trying to create a Department of Transportation. So those are the types of things that you can actually have these very stimulating conversations over with the people that you have been inviting to listen, who really want to be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem. So when we come back, I'll have to finish this monologue. Forgive me for taking so long. But anyway, we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
Okay, so some of the things I didn't get a chance to really dive into, and as a matter of fact, I want to really ponder on this a little bit. And this is not marketing or anything else, but this is how you can really get people and pull them into this. The best way you could probably get a like-minded person is to actually talk about, because if there's somebody that's really involved in politics and they're really involved in what the heck is going on, and they want to talk to you about, you know, why are these, you know, anti-Trumpites doing all this crap? If those people who are supporting conservative causes, you know, Trump, Republicans, the Constitution, so forth and so on. What you have to do is you have to put it in context of, are they a part of the solution or are they a part of the problem? Because those who are a part of the problem are those who are the constant consumers of the news cycle, regardless of whether that's the good things going on that are perceived to be good by Trump or the bad things that the news media and the progressives are trying to create and all of that misinformation. I'm not saying don't, you know, kind of gander at the news, but I mean, if you're on social media, you already get fed all sorts of garbage anyway. And a lot of it's really biased. And of course, people in their news feeds are getting information that they want, and they usually decry the information that they don't want, and they jump on people or what have you anyway. The whole point is that you need to start getting them to understand, well, what is the real problem? Because if you can get them to, you know, finally acknowledge that all the problems that we're facing, whether that be homosexual marriage being mandated by the government, education and secularism being mandated by the government, or the other crap, the LGBT agenda being mandated in the education system, whether it be abortions being mandated and protected, whether it be hate crimes being mandated and protected, all of these types of things. I mean, and those are only on the really the social sphere. There's the spending on entitlements in the welfare state, the things that are actually bankrupting us and the fiscal side of government. If they start understanding that the federal government has no constitutional standing in the entire sphere of all of these problems, and you get them to understand that there is only one solution, that the shareholders of that constitution, I'm using that term because apparently stakeholders is a contested word. And interestingly enough, if you understand a stakeholder is somebody that has the financial holdings of somebody else's, and it's in context to usually gambling. So we've kind of morphed on how we've redefined or how we look at things instead of the classical definition. So the better definition is shareholder, because states are the shareholders of that constitution. They are the ones that actually are the ones vesting power. They're vesting a very specific enumerated powers to the general government. We say, we, you know, acknowledge that we need you, and these are the things we need you to do. In other words, that general government is the subcontractor. But back to this problems and solutions. If they finally get it, if they finally start understanding, wow, yeah, I am a part of the problem because I'm not doing anything in regards to the solution. I have to start getting involved and actually help other people start receiving this message as well. That's the old snowball theory. It's the the evolutionary theory that as this, you know, or the spreading of the fire, the spreading of the light, the spreading of the word. This is the truth, folks. I mean, if you don't believe that I am correct on this, if you believe, as you know, some of these other pseudo-constitutionalists say, oh no, this is just another path to an Article 5 convention or what have you, there is an abyss. An abyss between those folks that are trying to, I'll use the term initiate, I was going to say ignite, those folks who are trying to initiate a constitutional convention, because I truly believe most of those people are good people. They recognize there's a problem, they recognize that they've got to do something, and that's great, because that's what a patriot does. A patriot vigorously supports the Constitution, and they realize that the government is doing all these unconstitutional things. And they feel, and they've been duped into believing, well, the only mechanism we have is the Article 5 Convention, which is baloney. It is clear within the Constitution that those things not delegated remain to the states. So is it delegated that the states have to go along with anything and everything the federal? No, it's absolutely contrary to the concept. The states are the ones that are supposed to be the safeguards. So in other words, if they didn't delegate the power, they're the ones that are supposed to interpose. They're the ones that are supposed to stand up and inject and say, stop, cease and desist. And that's what the states are supposed to do, period. And anybody that is a status quo that defends, no, 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 we got to, you know, just stay the course. Don't do anything. What we have to do is hold them to their oath. They've been saying that. And I'm pointing my fingers at the leadership of the John Birch Society since the 50s. And they've touted themselves as the defenders of the Constitution in keeping communism from progressing. And they have been a dismal failure. What is the definition of insanity? Yeah, insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. And that's all they've been doing. And so there are, and believe me, I'm just telling you that there are great John Birchers out there that really understand the Constitution that are walking away from that leadership. They're not leaving the organization. They're just walking away from, don't tell me what to think because you're wrong on this. And that are standing up for Republic Review. Now, a lot of them just don't want to take the, because of the reward systems and so forth within some of these organizations like the COS and John Birch Society, you know, you have to do what you're quote unquote told to do or you don't go anywhere. And so I can tell you, though, that Republic Review, the argument as well as the description of the processes was vetted by some really good friends of mine that were really good constitutional scholars, and they basically shrugged their shoulders. There's nothing in here that gives pause to the true John Birch constitutional conservative side. I mean, it is not. You clearly state that if you get involved in Republic Review and you have an active petition to Congress to call for a convention of states, you rescind that first. That's the first thing you do, is you rescind it. We have no desire to amend the Constitution. Our intent, first and foremost, is compliance. Now, what happens, I want you to understand, what happens when all of a sudden we shut down all of the government, we obtain compliance? How many welfare recipients are going to understand that what they've been receiving has been unconstitutional and they've been stealing, using the government as their force, their thug, and been stealing from the hard workers of America? And they've been stealing our fortunes for our future and our posterity. I'm sorry. There's just so many words that sound alike. Anyway, you get my point? Do you understand what I'm saying? And I really am sorry for taking these long dialogues, but these things have been percolating. And like I told you, there's lots of things that I want to cover, but I have to say this because I have mentioned the coronavirus. Can there be any good that comes from the coronavirus? Absolutely. How many billions of dollars has the Hollywood, the corruption and the evil spewing of misinformation, propaganda, and so forth, how many billions of dollars have they lost because of the coronavirus so far? 5 billion. So that's a good thing, right? As far as I'm concerned, when those purveyors of misinformation, the entertainment industry in a whole, when they actually suffer, and as a matter of fact, there are unintended consequences to their plan. They don't realize that as they kill off, because if their goal is to really get down to 500 million people on the earth, that means that they're going to lose all their subscribers, all these industries will collapse. I mean, who's going to be able to run the infrastructure? If you have just 500 million people on the earth, how is it that unless they actually start invoking artificial intelligence, robots, and those types of things to do the work for them? And I mean, again, you want to talk about a world of hurt when you start unleashing some of these things, because there are unintended consequences with everything you do. And we constantly see this, and it's like, we can't even learn our lessons, right? Anyway, we're going to be going into another hard break. I just looked at the clock and I go, oh my gosh, I just went through two segments and I didn't get into the ratification debates. Please forgive me. But I will, with this little time I have left, pokey in the eye. If you are a coffee drinker and you have not even tried, Red State Coffee, then, you know, what is it, $12 to buy a bag of Red State Coffee, then I just have to say, well, come on, really? This is the only organization that's come up, and it's not like I have the time to go out fishing for supporters, sponsors, and so forth. I don't have that time, folks. If you have a legitimate business and you have an opportunity to sponsor the show, by all means, we even have a promo for that. But I'm just saying, you know, if you want to help and you're drinking coffee, spend a little bit more if it is a little bit more than what you're spending. I believe the shipping is free. So if you add the convenience of that, I believe it's free. Just tell me if it's not. But please, please try to support this show any way you possibly can. And if you don't drink coffee, send money. I'm just kidding. We will be right back after these two promos with Ratification Debates. Thank you so much.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so as I was just kind of joking, and I hope anybody that has listened to the show can acknowledge, can understand that there has been the sale of my books, any money that's come in from advertiser sponsors or what have you, it only subsidizes the travel and the expenses that we have in just moving this message forward. I was talking to some people this weekend, and one of the things they asked is, okay, so what happens when one state actually steps up? And one state is, you know, they've basically cemented themselves into demanding full compliance to the Constitution. Well, what happens at that point, when they're finally cemented in the idea of full compliance, it frees me up, because now this is really no longer my idea. This is really no longer a trademark. I no longer own this, and I'm no longer under the threat of somebody coming in and trying to buy up this concept and say, well, we're going to enterprise this and we're going to make money on this, and we'll never bring this to fruition, because we'll dupe everybody into buying into this And that way, you know, we can actually have one control over it and not solve any problem and get rich. Because I've had three people in my past that have actually stepped up and have, you know, tried to get on board. And that's kind of the directions that they've always wanted to take. This is not about, if you give money, that money is going to the cause. It's either printing material. There is nobody, zero people are receiving emoluments other than those people. Like when we do the rodeos for Republic Review and we fly people out to do these rodeos and we create these videos of the rodeo. When we do that, when we do these promos, or I should say these rodeos and create this movie, the only people that will be paid are those actually performing in, you know, their what we call the honorarium to pay them to come out and speak. We'll be covering their cost of travel and their cost of, you know, their basic expenses, food, that type of stuff, rental car. But it's not like they're coming out as employees, receiving benefits and all sorts of emoluments, that type of thing. We're just trying to make sure that people are giving some basic, those people who have, you know, like Trevor Lawton. When Trevor Lawton comes out, he'll receive a token honorarium, and we'll pay him for his time and, or I should say, for his travel and those expenses. But that's it, folks. That is it. Nobody is making a living off of Republic Review. It's kind of similar to your state legislatures. I mean, they're practically working for free anyway. But anyway, this is Mr. Marshall. We're getting into Marshall's his affirmations on the limitations of the court and the federal government, which he actually contradicts himself later on. So these are really important citations. We haven't gotten to these yet. This is real gold because this completely contradicts what he asserted in seven of his hallmark cases, that the federal government had no bounds for necessary and proper if they felt it was necessary, or the supremacy clause. Those were the two, and even on the commerce clause and contracts. He violates the premise that the federal government can actually dictate these things. No, they don't. As when it comes to the commerce, they're only the one that is supposed to, you know, make sure that equity is provided. They're not supposed to be creating laws. Anyway, that's left to the states when it comes to how they dictate. And so they only come in and say, your law is pitching, you know, because you're creating all this tax and handling services and so forth that is excessive, you know, like New York with all the goods coming through their harbor. That there is the federal government's responsibility to make sure that the states are not using economic warfare against each other. And the Supreme Court started violating this when the North actually started using tax and oppressive laws in attacking the North, or I should say the South. And so it's one thing to, you know, do something for an honorable or good cause. But when you do, you let the genie out of the bottle, and then next thing you know, somebody else will come up with another good cause to do that exact same thing, and it is out of control. But anyway, this is what Marshall says. John Marshall says, Mr. Chairman, this is a part of the plan before us, is a great improvement to that system from which we are now departing, the Articles of Confederation. Here are tribunals appointed for the decision of controversies, which were before either not at all or improperly provided for. That many benefits will result from this to the members of the collective society. Everyone confesses. Unless this organization be defective and so construed as to injure instead of accommodating the conveniences of the people, it merits our approbation, our agreement, acceptance, and so forth. After such a candid and fair discussion by those gentlemen who support it, after the very able manner in which they have investigated and examined it, I conceive that it would be no longer considered as so very defective, and that those who opposed it would be convinced of the impropriety of some of these objections. But I perceive they still continue the same opposition. gentlemen have gone on, and I love, you know, the just the generic term of the opponents, gentlemen have gone on an idea that the federal courts will not determine the causes which may come before them with the same fairness and impartiality with which other courts decide. What are the reasons for this supposition? Do they draw them from the manner in which judges are chosen, or the tenure of their office? What is it that makes us trust our judges? Their independence in office, the manner of appointment. Are not the judges of the federal courts chosen with as much wisdom as the judges in the state governments? Are they not equally, if not more, independent? I'm going to stop right there. I've already mentioned this before, that after a while, it didn't take long for the ship to sail when Alexander Hamilton understood that there was a separation of ideologies. There was a small organization, a small group of people in the political elite that wanted to self-aggrandize the federal government. He knew who those lawyers were so that he could make them judges. And John Marshall was one of them. And in the midnight appointments, John Marshall became, or I think actually he became the Chief Justice before, but nevertheless, John Marshall was one of those that was brought and introduced into the Supreme Court by Alexander Hamilton himself. He and Alexander Hamilton, people don't understand, it wasn't just what he did as the Secretary of Treasury when he changed the scope of the State Department to meet his needs and aggrandize the Treasury Department. He did that deliberately, and Jefferson was fit to be tied when all of a sudden he comes in and he's had a neutered State Department. But anyway, I don't want to focus on this too much, but the point being is most people look at what he did when he was trying to self-aggrandize as the Department of Treasury, but the real damage that this man did, Alexander Hamilton, was that he was involved in seating judges that would take us down the direction of all sorts of compromises for slavery and in enlarging slavery in the domain of the court system. Because if you look at how the majority of the court judges went from Taney and the rest of them, all of these men were a part of, and I'll just call it, I'll just have to say, they had to have created a secret society to know who was on their team and who wasn't. And if you understand, so how is it, I beg you, how is it that a Ku Klux Klan, Hugo Black, gets appointed to the justice or the Supreme Court and becomes the Chief Justice? How is that happening under FDR? And even, I'd have to look at Hugo Black, who actually anointed. Actually, it's probably more apt than anything else to say, but you know, how he got to where he was in his whole career and so forth. But here was clearly a man that had, you know, nothing but nefarious intent, not only in a racial type of context, but as well as a religious context. He was the man that gave us the separation of church and state that was all unconstitutional. How is it that he became a Chief Justice and a Supreme Court member in the 1900s? There had to have been, and there has to be, this cabal of lawyers and judges who are all working to, you know, wink, wink, nod, nod. These are the good guys. Those are the bad guys. And, you know, I'm not convinced. I'm just not convinced that the Supreme Court justices that are being assigned today are ever going to be good guys. You've heard me say this before. I think that we need to completely, and this is only once we actually really start understanding the Constitution, the content, and the intent, the framers' intent, the original intent of the Supreme Court and their layout and so forth, would we be able to actually improve on the Supreme Court and lock it down permanently by actually bringing it into what I would say the true concepts of republicanism? Because the judiciary was one of those things that if you look at it today, it is a pompous, you know, position, and I think it is no longer representative of the true intent that the framers had in American republicanism, representative government, and so forth. And again, it's all about the laws and it's all about the context, so forth, but I digress. We will get right back into John Marshall's comments and not GR's comments after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Are you a patriotic proprietor of a business that is looking to get exposure on a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. The show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so my promise, because this is the final segment of the show, and I actually was hoping to get through all five of these citations. I haven't even finished one. So in tomorrow's episode, and then in our next episode, I promise that I will keep down my editorializing, and I will keep down my comments other than those regarding the ratification debates, because that's what this whole focus is about. It's not about the movie industry losing $5 billion, at least not yet. Anyway, this is what Marshall says, and I'm going to go back just one or two sentences in this paragraph. Are not the judges of the federal courts chosen with as much wisdom as the judges of our state governments? Are not they equally, if not more, independent? If so, shall we not conclude that they will decide on equal impartiality and candor? If there be as much wisdom and knowledge in the United States as in particular state, shall we conclude that the wisdom and knowledge will not be equally exercised in the selection of judges? The principle on which they object to the federal jurisdiction seems to me to be founded on a belief that there will not be a fair trial in these courts. If this committee will consider it fully, they will find it has no foundation, and that we are to secure there as anywhere else what mischiefs result from such causes being tried there. Is there not the utmost reason to conclude that judges wisely appointed and independent in their offices will never countenance any unfair trial? What are the subjects of their jurisdiction? Let me examine them with an exception that causes will be as candidly tried there as elsewhere and then determined. The objection which was made by the honorable member who was first up yesterday, Mr. George Mason, has been so fully refuted that it is not worth while to notice it. He objected to, so here he goes, he says, you know, it has been refuted, so we're not going to mention it. Then he starts mentioning it. Anyway, he says, he objected to Congress having power to create a number of inferior courts according to the necessity of public circumstances. I had an apprehension that those gentlemen who place no confidence in Congress would object that there might be no inferior courts. I own that I thought those gentlemen would think there would be no inferior courts, as it depended on the will of Congress, but that we should be dragged to the center of the Union. But I did not conceive that the power of increasing the number of courts could be objected to by any gentleman, as it would remove the inconvenience of being dragged to the center of the United States. I own that the power of creating a number of courts is in my estimation so far from being a defect that it would seem necessary to the perfection of the system. After having objected to the number of mode, he objected to the subject matter of their cognizance. Here, Mr. Marshall reads the second section of the Article 3. And then he goes back to, so there was a little pause, and he actually read the second section of Article 3. And then he says, these, sir, are the points of federal jurisdiction to which he objects. With a few exceptions, let us examine each of them with the supposition that the same impartiality will be observed there is in other courts, and then see if any mischief will result from them. With respect to its cognizance, in all cases arising under the Constitution and the laws of the United States, he says that the laws of the United States being paramount to the laws of the particular states, there is no case but what this will extend to. Has the government of the United States made power to make laws on every subject? Does he understand it to be so? And I'm going to stop right here and I'm going to back up, because he starts to create this little case and he basically asks these in questions. These are theoretical questions, or, you know, what do they call them? Starts with an R. These are rhetorical questions. They're not going to be answered, but he's putting these things out there. And he says, has the government of the United States power to make laws on every subject? Does he understand it so? Can they make laws affecting the mode of transferring property or contracts or claims between citizens of the same state? And each of these are kind of maybe outlandish assertions, but going to the first one, has the government of the United States power to make laws on every subject? Absolutely not. It's limited to the enumerated powers. Does he understand it so? Does he really believe that they can do that? You know, is he that stupid? Can they make laws affecting the mode of transferring property, contracts, or claims between the citizens of the same state? Of course not. They can't. Can they go beyond the powers, beyond the delegated powers? So right there, my friends, there is a little insight as to what he's talking about, because he's laying down the question and the following is the answer. Can they go beyond the delegated powers? This is how he lays it out. If they, the federal government, were to make a law not warranted by any of the powers enumerated in that Constitution, such as marriage, such as energy, such as housing, such as education, such as agriculture, such as labor, and these are all executive departments that the federal government possesses, right? That there's no enumeration of power in that Constitution. These are John Marshall's words himself. He says, if they were to make a law not warranted by any of the powers enumerated it would be considered by the judges as an infringement of the Constitution, which they are to guard. Well, what happened, friends? Well, when Marshall actually becomes the Chief Justice, he starts making rulings and making assertions that absolutely contradict this, saying that we can do anything. And based on that, they started injecting this thing called case law and precedent. Well, Marshall said we could do this, so we're going to do this. And they used all of these precedents, case laws, to slowly slide and slimily grow. I don't know if that's a word, slimily, but grow the federal government well outside the bounds of the Constitution. And it's all unconstitutional, because the only way that they can assume any new role, responsibility, and power is through an amendment. The states must delegate by 3/4, agreeing to the amendment, ratifying the amendment. 3/4 of the states have to grant that power before the federal government can even consider doing it, such as the Department of Transportation. So I'm going to read that again. Can they go beyond the delegated powers? If they were to make law not warranted by the powers enumerated, it would be considered by the judges as an infringement of the Constitution, which they are to guard. They would not consider such a law as coming under the jurisdiction. They would declare it void. Now, the Supreme Court has been given powers that actually violate the Constitution, such as the Rule Act back in the 1930s, when all of a sudden the Supreme Court could start making laws and rules. Hold it. Where is that in the Constitution? Where is it that they can actually make rules that actually extend themselves into jurisdictions that they have no jurisdiction over? You see my point? They have been making it up as they go along. They've been hoodwinking, and because of our constitutional illiteracy, and the only reason we have become a constitutionally illiterate people is because, and I'm going to put this back into context, why is it that you may understand the Ten Commandments? Why is it that an adult, an idiot like Jimmy Carter, you know, understood that when he lusted after a woman in his heart, he had committed adultery already? Because he read the scriptures that highlighted, thou shalt not commit adultery. Well, hey, if I'm just lusting and if I'm not actually, you know, committing the act, then, you know, that's okay. Oh, absolutely not. That's what the intent of the scriptures is, to help you understand those Ten Commandments. It's the same thing as these ratification debates. These ratification debates clearly delineate the limitations of the government and the only way the government can obtain any new powers. The roles and the checks and balances, as Marshall just said, that the court and the Supreme Court are obligated, as he says, it would be considered by the judges as an infringement of the Constitution, which they are to guard. That's their job. That's their foremost job, is guarding the Constitution. They would consider it a law as, they would not consider it as a law coming under their jurisdiction. They would declare it void. Anyway, let me try to wrap this up. It will annihilate the state courts, says the Honorable Gentleman Mason. Does not every gentleman here know that the cause in our courts are more numerous than they can decide according to their present construction? Look at the dockets. You will find them crowded with suits which the life of a man will not see determined. If some of these suits be carried to other courts, will it be wrong? They will still have business enough. In other words, the things in the courts of the states really don't change, other than the few enumerated jurisdiction powers. But were the states ever really, you know, brokers in the courts over the military and going to war? No. That was under the Articles of Confederation and the traveling circuit of judges and so forth anyway. And so it's not like we granted all these powers that they have usurped. The fact of the matter is, my friends, is that what they've done is they've usurped all these powers, and now they are reigning with tyranny over us. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.